Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, January 3rd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, lots of new faces in Washington as the new Congress convenes. Keith Ellison sets his priorities as he gets ready for his new job. Happy New Year, everybody. Let's get right to it. Seven more top spots in the administration of Governor-elect Tim Walz will be filled today. Brian Baxt has more.
Walz has a ways to go to fill out his cabinet. The DFLer made 8 commissioner appointments in December. His latest batch includes department heads for agriculture, health, human rights, human services, mediation services, natural resources, and pollution control. Walz scheduled a morning press conference at a farm in Hastings to announce his choices. He has several other high-level positions yet to decide on. Walz takes over as governor on Monday. Brian Baxt, NPR News.
Minnesota will have 5 new members when the new Congress is sworn in today. 2 are Republicans, and we'll hear from them tomorrow. Today it's the 3 new DFLers and what they hope to accomplish as Democrats take control of the House. Mark Zadeklik reports from Washington.
3 of Minnesota's 5 new members of Congress are Democrats, and one of them already has an international following. Ilhan Omar came to the United States as a Somali refugee and attracted a lot of attention when she became the first Somali-American member of the Minnesota legislature 2 years ago. There's even more attention on her as she heads to Congress. Here's the 37-year-old on Comedy Central's The Daily Show last month.
Before we get started, I wanted to take a selfie.
Oh, well, let's do this. Let's do this.
Everyone wants to make sure I do that.
This is the millennial generation.
A minute later, she characterized herself this way.
I am America's hope and the president's nightmare.
A nightmare, Omar told NPR News, because she's a hijab-wearing brown Muslim woman and a refugee from an area of the world President Trump has disparaged, who now has a seat at the table in the nation's capital. Omar will represent Minnesota's 5th District, which fellow DFLer Keith Ellison left for his successful bid for Minnesota Attorney General. She will also be a leader of the House Progressive Caucus, to which nearly 1 in 4 members belong. Omar says liberals will use the voting bloc to make sure Washington Democrats address issues voters want tackled.
We hope to be very influential. Most of the progressive policies that we are advocating for have bipartisan support from the American people. So when we're looking at sensible gun laws, that is overwhelmingly supported by most Americans. When we're looking at Medicare for All, that's overwhelmingly supported by most of Americans.
Also making history with her election to Congress is Democrat Angie Craig, the first openly gay member of a Minnesota congressional delegation. It's remarkable, she says, that her sexuality was not a campaign issue.
The fact that it's such a non-issue and was such a non-issue in my race is probably the sign that, at least here in Minnesota, the country is moving forward.
Craig defeated first-term Republican Congressman Jason Lewis in Minnesota's 2nd District. Although Republicans retain control of the Senate and White House, Craig says she's optimistic that lawmakers from both parties will be able to make progress on issues, including transportation and broadband access.
The president has expressed an interest in infrastructure. We have talked to a number of, in our district, city leaders who are Republican and Democrat and independent, and everybody knows we have not been investing in this country in the way that we should be.
DFLer Dean Phillips, who, like Craig, has a business background, won in Minnesota's 3rd District, which Republican Eric Paulson has represented for a decade. Phillips and Omar agree with Craig that infrastructure is ripe for investment, and Phillips has a sense that Congress is about to change in a bipartisan rebuke to President Trump's style of leadership.
I'd like to think that perhaps we as a country have hit rock bottom relative to our political discourse. I think the 2016 election may have been a wake-up call to thoughtful people on both sides of the aisle that we must do better. And my sense of the freshman class of new representatives in the U.S. House is a lot of people decided to run for Congress for that very reason.
But long-time congressional scholar Norm Ornstein from the American Enterprise Institute says the signs are clear that bipartisanship is not on the horizon. Instead, he says, look for an entrenched battle between the Republican White House and the new Democratic majority in the House.
We know that the agenda for investigations and for oversight of government agencies' wrongdoing, malfeasance, ineptitude are going to be all over the House of Representatives. Legislating? Not so much.
On the issue of investigating the president, all three new Minnesota DFL members of the congressional delegation agree Democrats need to wait for the results of special counsel Robert Mueller's inquiry before making any moves to impeach President Trump. Covering politics, I'm Mark Zedeklik, NPR News, Washington.
Minnesota will have a new attorney general next week when Keith Ellison takes over for Lori Swanson, who did not seek re-election last year. Ellison will be the state's 30th attorney general and the fifth consecutive Democrat to hold the office. He's been preparing for his new job with a series of community listening sessions throughout the state. The third public gathering is tonight in North Minneapolis. Tim Pugmire has more on Ellison and his plans for the office.
As a candidate for attorney general, Ellison said he would work to help people afford their lives and ensure they have dignity and respect. Ellison says those goals remain unchanged as he prepares to take office.
We're trying to do some key hires. We're trying to get a grip on our budget situation, and we're trying to reach out as much as we can. I've been reading voraciously, and you know, Lori Swanson has been incredibly generous with her time, really helpful, and we've been working together on the transition.
Ellison, who's 55, was the first Muslim elected to Congress. He built a reputation nationally as a leading progressive in the House and was elected deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee after the 2016 election. But he gave up that post and his safe congressional seat to be attorney general. He says drug prices, student debt, and housing costs are among his priorities. And he says the public meetings that he already held in Duluth and Albert Lea provided additional advice on how best to approach those issues.
We never want to say, well, we've declared our priorities for now and always, done. What we want to do is say, is be very sensitive to what people are going through as we, you know, calibrate our focal point and our priorities.
Ellison says drug pricing remains at the top of his list. His immediate plan is to create a task force on the issue. He also wants to continue Swanson's recent lawsuit against drug manufacturers over insulin prices.
The goal is affordable drug prices. So whether you need a lawsuit or need some sort of investigation or negotiation or what, I'm clear on what we're actually trying to achieve, which is affordable drug prices.
Lori Swanson says she's been working closely with Ellison to ensure a smooth transition. Swanson, who's leaving after 12 years as attorney general, said she's confident that Ellison will follow through on several lawsuits she recently initiated. She also believes he will continue the consumer protection tradition of the office.
There's not many people out there who are really looking out for the interests of the little guy and the consumer, and Attorney General Ellison has that interest and has that passion and has that desire to help people and help regular folks get on with their lives. And that's been impressive to me and important to me as well, because it's a role that this office has long fulfilled, and it's really a critical role.
Ellison made a key staffing decision last week when he hired John Keller, the executive director of the Immigration Law Center of Minnesota, to be his chief deputy. David Schultz, a political science professor at Hamline University, said the hiring signals that Ellison is making immigration a top issue. Schultz said he expects Ellison to be more aggressive than Swanson in challenging the Trump administration on immigration policy and other issues.
Lori Swanson has joined other Democratic attorney generals across the country, but has not necessarily been, let's say, the lead attorney general in challenging. I think that's going to change with Ellison.
Ellison will be sworn in along with other constitutional office holders at a ceremony Monday in St. Paul. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire at the Capitol.
A family in northwestern Minnesota is mourning the loss of a young Marine who was killed while on duty in Washington, D.C. Lance Corporal Riley Kuzina was 20 years old. He died of a gunshot wound, reportedly the result of an accidental discharge by a fellow Marine. Matt Sepik reports.
Riley Kujina headed for basic training at Camp Pendleton, California, after he graduated from Tri-County High School in Carlstadt in 2017. His mother, Markel Kujina, says Riley wanted to give the first 5 years of his adulthood to his country.
You know, he didn't enter the Marines because he didn't know what he wanted to do. He entered the Marines with the intention of, this is what I want to do. He joined the Marines because it was the hardest of all of the branches. He said, if I can make it through the Marines, I can make it through anything.
His mother says Kujina loved the outdoor lifestyle of northern Minnesota and was an avid hockey player, hunter, and angler. He was a young man with his eye on the future.
He loved his country and he always felt like he should serve his country. And when he got out, he had goals. He wanted to start his own construction company and he wanted to get married to his high school sweetheart. And he wanted to have kids.
Markel last spoke with her son when he was home for Christmas. They took a family trip to Duluth and the North Shore. Last Saturday, he headed back to his post at the historic Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C. Markel says he was always thinking of others and sent her a message the night before he was killed.
He texted me on New Year's Eve and asked if I'd gotten a gift for his grandpa because he was worried that his grandpa didn't get a Christmas gift. And that was the last thing I ever heard from him.
When she spoke with NPR News last night, Markel said she had yet to hear anything from the Marine Corps about the circumstances of Riley's death. The Washington Post, citing two sources with knowledge of the investigation, reports that Kujina appears to have been hit by a round that a fellow Marine fired accidentally. The Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department says officers responded to the Marine barracks just after 5 a.m. on New Year's Day. The publicly available police report includes few details, but does say that a second person at the scene, quote, had been handling a firearm. Despite life-saving measures, Riley Kujina was pronounced dead at a hospital less than an hour later. In a brief statement released Tuesday, the Marine Corps says, quote, the command is making every effort to take care of those involved, particularly the Marine's family and friends. Besides his mother and grandfather, Lance Corporal Kujina leaves behind a brother and two sisters. Matt Sepik, NPR News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.